adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network.
Cool.
Yeah, I know that's not the music you're accustomed to hearing on this broadcast, but we had a loose wire on one of our sound cards, on one of our PCs, and we were freaking out there for a moment, and we got it figured out. Thanks for tuning into Project Urantia. A growing number of people around the world believe that our planet has been visited in the past by celestial beings and who may be continuing to affect history on this planet. And in my humble opinion, one human being who knows more about that than anyone else, it's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
I was freaking out there, man. You got 100,000 people listening and something doesn't work, it makes you a little nervous. Well, how are we doing this week? It's been a week since we've spoken with you. How are things going today?
Well, in that time, last week, you know, on the Hawaiian Islands, Maui included, we're having some pretty awful weather. And I kind of associate that with the sun's activity. And because of its nature, it was more than just bad weather. You know, we had things that are very rare here in Hawaii, such as tornadoes, actual real tornadoes.
Well, that's right. You guys did have a tornado.
Yeah. And some hail. And the hail that I experienced as a child was very, very mild, about the size of BBs. However, this hail that we had recently in some areas went anywhere from softball size to golf ball size. So they were pretty big. It depends where they were falling and, you know, what particular zone this was developed in. But hail is very rare in Hawaii, especially, you know, where it falls in places like even Lahaina, Maui. So that's pretty interesting. It has to do with the activity of the sun as well as other parts of the world's, you know, climate, you know, its normal climate, but supercharged by the sun's more than radiant activity in terms of particle ejection, which can actually affect more than just electromagnetically or electronics, but actually our weather.
You realize when you say softball-sized hail, how many softball-sized hail pellets does it take to kill a human? Answer, one. You know, things fall at a certain velocity, and then I think they call it terminal velocity. I don't know how fast that is, but can you imagine getting hit by something the size of a softball with the same consistency as rock?
Yeah, well, one of the things that perhaps you know, kept them from really hitting ground hard was probably the level in which they finally fell down. I mean, they were held aloft for quite some time, and the winds were very strong and having a unique direction, and of course one of them being upward, and this probably allowed the hail to come down a little more gently because it had to tackle all these different variants in the wind direction. And nevertheless, they were measured and were equivalent to something in that neighborhood.
I mean, let's say that's a comparable thing happened over a baseball stadium this summer, and there's 50,000 people in a limited location with no cover trying to get to their cars, and you might have thousands of deaths.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the problems of the early nuclear tests happened in, I guess, the early days of exploding it out in the open resulted in hail that killed the observers. And many of these observers were just fairly ignorant military troops that were just stationed to see how, you know, the effect of the blast would be. But along with the blast, later the hill started to fall down, and a whole bunch of them got hurt and killed. So the upward energies probably help create the, I guess, the hill.
It's if it wasn't so sad, it would almost be funny that these poor men just following orders were, hey, go stand over there, Bob.
Yeah.
And then Bob doesn't exist anymore. Oh, dang, we need some more Bobs over here. You know, I realize they didn't know what they were doing back then, but oh boy, wouldn't that be great to be a guinea pig? How would you like that? Well, there were certainly a lot of predictions of bad things that would happen with the latest solar flares, and didn't have quite as much damage as they thought, did they?
Not in terms of its effect onto, let's say, our power grid and our high-tech devices, whether they be satellites or just terrestrial electronics. However, that doesn't leave us in the clear. As a matter of fact, 2012 still remains a very special time in terms of being exposed to a cosmic event or cosmic realities. And this is one of the things that the Celestials gave me a heads up into, because in my question of what is gravity to them, and I received more than just a simple answer, but they were fairly simple in concept. When you moved away from the idea of what gravity is in terms of expansionary gravity, what would be the gravity that would we feel here on Earth as our planet expands, as the rest of the universe expands at a certain rate, and this rate is verified, of course, by you can drop any device as long as frictional forces like a feather would incur quite a bit in terms of the atmosphere. But if you a cannonball versus a BB, they all fall at the same rate. That verifies the concept of expansion in one simplistic way. However, when it came down to that explanation, I also asked, well, why is it, and what did create the planets? Was it gravity in that same sense? And, you know, as the, I was familiar at least enough with the idea of how we had theorized our planets were grew as attractive little bits of particles or asteroids, and finally grew in bigger and bigger and bigger. I asked about that, and the answer was that it's not quite the same idea. It involves some of it, but it was another aspect which they do not classify as gravity. And it said, oh, and you know, is it related to the concept of why our solar system lays its all the orbits in a flat plane, disc, and our galaxies tend to have this disc shape for a large majority of them that have this spirals disc shape. And it says, yes, that's definitely true. And I said, what is this then if it's not gravity? What can you explain this force to me if it's a force? And they explained it and said, yes, you've witnessed it and you've experienced it from your earliest stage. They, again, knew that I had made Van de Graaff generators and things as a child. And playing with static electricity was a lot of fun, but it was harder to do in Hawaii because of the moist, humid air. But nevertheless, I was able to, manage to play around with some of the static electricity. So I said, yeah, I kind of understand the idea of static electricity. And this is just continue in thinking that way, and you would realize that there is a lot more to this energy and why it forms out into this planar type formations. And having this flat planar type formation is exactly the edge on that we are going to be experiencing very shortly. In fact, we're experiencing a lot of it now. But indeed, one of the amazing things that was pointed out to me was that it is an extremely sharp, it can be an extremely sharp edge in terms of this static energy type energy force. And of course, there are people who have already theorized the concept of an electric universe, and others who have supposed on galactic superwaves and things like that, like Lavalette. But there is more to that in terms of how they have been able to use these things, like that type of energy. And one of the reasons why the saucer shape is very common, because that's part of the behavior of basically a lot of the material that we experience, especially the electron. And this is something that we're going to be getting a pretty good zap from. But more importantly, it's not so much our planet, it's our sun that will be getting that zap and is getting it now, because the behavior of the sun is, again, very weird. It's almost like it was calmed down a bit and sort of like, you know, put in a near quiescent form. Now it's just sort of waking up, and now it, and the way it's waking up is quite dramatic, and will continue to do so until we just cross that plane of the ecliptic of our galaxy, the Milky Way, which will bring some very interesting things and could be enough of a exposure to the that energy that, as it told me, think static electricity, and that could very well flip our magnetic field.
So our galaxy is like when you used to have those pajamas with the feet in them, and you could go across the carpet and touch your brother, and it would go snap.
Yeah, one of the things about that is that you don't realize that you just generated well over several kilovolts to, in order to do that zap, you know. So people have been feeling thousands of volts, you know, as far as zaps concerned, quite commonly in static electric environments. Now, Nikola Tesla was able to experiment at megavolt levels and multi-megavolt levels. So these millions of volts seem not to hurt anyone. I did play with Tesla coils myself and was able to, let's say, illuminate fluorescent light bulbs in my hand and play things, you know, not an incandescent, a fluorescent, and sort of like touch sparks at the end of that, and then create, you know, grand levels of electrostatic energy, as well as electrical discharge type of energy. But it's quite interesting. When we get, when it comes down to biologic life, getting exposed to these high-level energy waves, static electricity and things like that, we tend to survive them, except for maybe when the current flow is very, very high. If we're surrounded by, you know, high voltage, one of the good examples is on this 30 kilowatt lines, or even higher, million volt lines. These birds land on top of there and sort of line up on there, and they're actually charged up to that voltage, but no current's flowing through them, so they do fine. And that's pretty much a similar case that may happen with most of the people on the planet if such a galactic wave hits. However, how it impacts how our gravity works, our magnetic field works, that is the secondary effect that might cause more than just bad weather. And bad weather, of course, for me in this last experience, I was expecting to see some kind of perhaps magnetic type of anomalies or variances in our telecommunications, which are using probably our radio a lot. In fact, right now, we're, as far as telecommunications is concerned, the old high-frequency radio is blacked out. I don't have a signal because the ionosphere is absorbing everything. It's not reflecting anything back. So I have blackout, essentially what they call radio blackout.
Wow.
But yeah.
Now, what frequencies would that affect?
Generally, the high-frequency waves tend to be from 3 to 30 megacycles. That's the classification, and millions of cycles per second, 3 million cycles.
But affecting, 30 million. Affecting what? What runs at those levels?
Generally, the high frequency radio broadcast would be in the lower spectrum, which tends to find its. Old AM broadcasts would be using gravity waves. I mean, not gravity waves, but ground waves. And, of course, the higher frequencies, VHF, tend to be line of sight. So they don't necessarily get involved in reflecting off the ionosphere. So the ionosphere tends to reflect signals in the range between 3 to 30 megacycles, and sometimes up to 50. 60, 70 maybe, but not used as much. Many of the old high-frequency sites that were used in the space NASA have been shut down because of our satellites. In other words, these communication links that were once primary, then became secondary, then finally tertiary, support links for communication, these tertiary ones have been shut down because we didn't basically never use them. And if our primary ones, which is satellite communications, go down, and when we back up to terrestrial communication type or fiber optic or things like that, which are not as easily affected, which could be interrupted by actual mechanical breaks, that could shut communication down worldwide. In fact, we have some areas in the world which have been dropped off the internet because of just ships' anchors, sometimes earthquakes, sometimes stretching zones, things like that, that have caused breaks in the mechanical breaks in the communication, broken wire, broken fiber optics. But right now, for those who are using the high-frequency area for research. One area that uses high-frequency a lot and is probably the most sophisticated high-frequency system ever developed by humankind is the HARP system. And that is extremely advanced in terms of what they're able to do. But it also relies on the fact that the ionosphere behaves itself, otherwise they cannot use a lot of what their frequency range allows for.
I was going to ask you about the HARP. That just popped in my mind as you were talking about that.
Yeah.
What about shortwave frequencies? Where do they fall?
Well, that's the high frequency is shortwave.
It is shortwave. I listen to shortwave every night before I go to bed. I listen to a station out of Texas that... I think it's 5.0, but so that we're talking the same spectrum then.
We're talking the same spectrum, yes. And when they black out, they can black out in different segments of that spectrum. And sometimes they can become highly selective in terms of distance. You have no local communication and only long communication. And then sometimes it's the reverse. So it all depends. And then a complete blackout happens. I think today is a complete blackout, but they go day to day, one day to the next day. Depends on the charge, because it discharges every time it exposes itself to the sun. The ionosphere has a different charge.
Well, I've known that shortwave radio existed. My dad has a Hallicrafter, and I used to listen to that in many different channels over the years, way back when. But until someone recently gave me a garage sale radio that had two bands of shortwave radio on it, I had no idea that there's a whole nother spectrum of radio out there that, you know, commercial radio stations and others are using that I had no idea existed for the last 30 years. So hopefully someone listening to my idiocy will realize there's a whole bunch of people broadcasting out there that you might want to listen to.
Yeah, they're South America is strong, and the Far East is very strong. China has got some powerful stations up. And let's see. Of course, one of the most famous of all is the Voice of America. And it's been up and running for a long time. And what I've noticed is that there's a lot of Christian missionary radio that uses high frequency because they can get their shows, these different shows concerning evangelistic concept of getting the gospel message out to areas which are detached. Essentially, can have a radio that is solar charged and they can bring in shortwave signals. So in these far removed areas, shortwave is still playing a big, big part in terms of broadcast type of information, and that goes into areas that are broadcasting into the Middle East as well, because these are just using the ionosphere versus selective digital technologies like downlinks on satellites and things like that, which can be suppressed in terms of that nature. Anyway.
Well, I guess I'm surprised that in this day and age of Wi-Fi and stations like ours that can broadcast worldwide, a fat signal with no static, that there are still people. You know, I have no idea what it must cost to run a station that can broadcast bouncing their signal off the ionosphere. I have no concept of what it must cost to run a business like that.
Well, yeah, it can run quite a bit. There's some stations that have shut down relatively recently because they were simply obsoleted out by the newer technologies that have, you know, made receiving television signals worldwide much easier. So people are receiving television signals in places where you never would think of, you know, a mud hut kind of concept of people receiving TV signals. But as far as remembering how people are, you know, who immigrated here from, you know, distant lands, generally from the Far East, I used to see them, taking out their little pocket radio and tuning into their favorite foreign broadcasts and listening to their native tongue, and asked one gentleman what was he listening to, and he says, oh, his favorite program from where he came from. And I said, oh, yeah, I guess foreign tongue too, so they kind of want to tune into it regularly, and they get disappointed sometimes because they can't always bring it in. Depends on the ionospherics.
But you brought up a good point that I don't think we've talked about on this show. You can get a lot of radio shows out of China on shortwave. And I don't know if any of you folks have seen the Chinese equivalent of CNN. If I go way up in the channels on my Time Warner cable, like 500 channels up, there's a television station exactly like CNN, but it's called CCN. And they are slick as snot on a hoe handle. They got it going on, and it looks like any American-produced program. It looks every bit as good as Fox or MSNBC or NBC, and it's China. And their point of view is entirely different on just about everything we talk about. And it's fascinating when you tune in and you're going, I mean, we're thinking they're running around with rice bowls and huts over there. Nuh-uh. They know what they got it going on, and they're talking to the world the way we show them how to. Now, I don't know whether that's good or bad. I'm just making an observation. Your thoughts, Michael?
Yeah, well, that's exactly one of the things that people should become aware of, is that China is, you know, not a third world nation anymore. They're definitely first, and are, you know, pretty much pulling the strings of the United States already. They're, you know, second in line as far as a creditor. Japan is probably the first as far as owning our debt. And both countries have benefited from our way of consuming their products. And they are very much aware that they've got to keep themselves attuned to not only the United States, but the rest of the world, and have a right kind of attitude. Whereas we tend to have broadcast companies and companies that give out news that have special interest ownership, and because of that, certain things never make it on to the news. And one of the interesting things that I noticed about some of these, especially China puts up a lot of new UFO news. If there's something like a bunch of people out in the street looking up in the air and pointing out a UFO, they put it on their news. And it's interesting, because some of the things that are exposed because of that are genuinely real sightings, and are, you know, making it there. And their people are actually very open to out of this world kinds of news, and as well, when it comes down to having a terrestrial bias, a political bias, I guess they also have that. But they're more open when it comes down to perhaps something like exopolitics. And and as I observed from some of these exposures, making into different news alignments around the world, was seeing these vertical columns of light a while back, who resemble very strongly my experience with these beings that I was exposed to, the Veranda Deck Most High Observers, as well as some of the others who are also beings of light. Making themselves visible there in the skies of China, and seeing that their involvement over there, of course, is getting probably to a point where they're probably very interested in keeping China, I guess, alive and well.
You know, it probably fits the agenda of the Chinese Communist and ruling party to have UFOs. I mean, China, the Communist Party in China is, if I'm not mistaken, is a godless enterprise. God does not exist in their world, and I think if you can manipulate public opinion to be fearful of the UFOs. I mean, look at the Bush administration. We're afraid of Saddam. We're afraid of Osama. Terror, and keep everybody. What's the? By the way, listeners, what's the terror elevation code today? Is it yellow? Is it red? What was that all crap about? Other than keeping you scared, and I think this works in their favor. You know, where we may want to deny the existence of UFOs, the Communist Party in China can use this to, you know, this fits in with what we've been telling you for the last 50 years. Am I crazy?
Well, you know, it's their communication, propaganda. The idea of that is, you know, have mind control, I guess, for the masses. And, of course, you know, the civilized countries of the world are always using that in one form or another, and the corporations themselves are also using that to have a type of subservience and mind control. And, you know, the idea of in the marketing realm, where they can get, you know, a person to buy something that they never bought before, take some money out of their pocket and spend it, or something that, you know, slices and dices in a new way, just simply because of how, you know, they present this gadget. And the same thing, of course, going to much higher senses in the political realm. In the exopolitical realm is one in which I believe that China has been open about and shown that their observation, Japan's observation, looking into things such as strange formations on the moon that look somewhat like buildings. And that stuff wasn't shown. I believe our own space race in the early 60s and late 60s, early 70s, probably detected some things very similar, but they were hushed up. However, in the realm of what's coming off of these probes and photographs, these things are being shown openly and not necessarily, declared as physical structures, but they sure resemble them. And I think that's something that shows a lot of curiosity and interest to all of those in terms of what is, you know, human life all about. And China is being a very old civilization, and everyone in China knows they're very old, been around a very long time, knows many of these stories that are historic and have been written down, as well as those that have gone through the oral tradition, perhaps, just being told legends and stuff like that, that we're speaking about gods and how the emperor, perhaps, was given special insight and favor in terms of how to run their civilization from the gods. In fact, walking around some of their old places in Beijing, in some places like they look like complete circular landing pad, and adjacent to a room that was never used except for some kind of meeting with a celestial entity, a god, and is well known. That history is well known by everyone in China.
Well, when you look back at the Egyptians and the Mayans and the Incas and the other tens of thousands, yes, there are tens of thousands of civilizations we've identified. We don't know who their names were or how much time they existed in history, but there's a lot of these civilizations back there. And it certainly makes sense to me, that possibly at one time, maybe the people in charge of these civilizations obviously were not necessarily people from this planet. And that you may have had competing civilizations in existence at the same time who were being led by either human hybrids or outright celestials.
Well, yes. This is something that happened at different, you know, not necessarily coordinated that tightly, but each civilization was allowed its growth path, and the geography of the planet allowed for the diversification. However, this was something that, you know, every society, a planet that is part of the universe as a whole, especially the universe which is actually functioning as a unified universe under, he said, what would be classified easily as the concept of the kingdom of heaven, is in a sense freely developed. In other words, they are freely developed toward having a type of uniqueness. But then again, there's some weakness in some of the systems that I was exposed to, and some of the planets, perhaps, that some of these beings did come from. sort of gave me a feeling like they sure limited themselves, and one which was quite apparent to me was the Dorian. And the Dorian were tall, and they had big eyes, blue eyes. They looked very human, but they all looked alike, exactly alike. And they also were neither male nor female. They had no sex type at all. And apparently their civilization had gone to the point where their body type was just one type, and their nature, the way they behave, was, you know, their personalities were unique, but they were quite unified. It seems to have been coming down to a point of absolute a typical Dorian would be indistinguishable from another Dorian. It's just, that's how much identical their physical appearance was. However, when speaking to more than one of them, they could definitely tell them apart. And this is an interesting thing in the development of society. Here on our planet, we do, you know, sort of pay attention to the color of a person's skin, how they look like. But that's one of their blessings, actually. When I look at us compared to the Dorians, it sure must be boring seeing everybody that looks exactly alike. Yet, in terms of their civilization, it went that path, eventually resulting in an entire planet or world made up of individuals that all look alike.
Japan, what did you say? No. Oh, you can send hate mail to DJ@artistfirst.com. If celestial implants or politically implanted celestials who would be running civilizations like perhaps maybe some of the Egyptian pharaohs, some of the ancient civilizations, can we confidently say that, say, in the past 2,000 years, maybe 3,000 past years, there has not been a celestial running a civilization?
Actually, when it came down to the Most High observers, the two that I met, they have the ability to, or they have the authority to move past that non-interference concept. They are the ones that did allow for the nuclear involvement instead of shutting down certain experiments and activity with our nuclear weapons. These involvements were allowed by them. They are, to a degree, responsible for the direction our civilization is going, but only to a degree, because it is in their very name that they're observers, not manipulators. But they do have that authority to raise up kingdoms and put down kingdoms or whatever it may seem like in the ancient times, and also to make sure that civilization, our planet, doesn't destroy itself. And if it comes down to that point, there will be an involvement, a serious involvement from the Celestials, because that cannot come to pass. It has to be put to an end, put to a stop. As a matter of fact, we're pretty much in a hotbed, and it's not because of those who are like the great powers of the world that have nuclear weapons. These little guys that are just running around with trying to get weapons and for their own idea of what they have to do with them. You know, looking at Iran's recent exposure from the satellite observation, they still have some facilities that are definitely involved in the development of nuclear weapons. So whether they develop them now or later, or are in involvement right now, to be found out, but the Most High is definitely know the level in which they are, as far as letting us know that it's under the veil, and perhaps that means they have it already, and trying to keep it hidden. But it's a point of celebration, perhaps, when it finally does come about. when it comes down to celestials running the planet, running a particular area of the civilization, that may have happened in the more direct ways in the past, but in our present time, it still happens, but not as direct. It's more a little nudge here, a little nudge there, a little tweak there.
Well, there's a couple of Egyptian pharaohs. I think King Tut's father was one of them. I can't remember his name offhand, who had a tremendously elongated skull.
Right.
And all the Egyptian pharaohs look pretty good on everything that you've seen over thousands of years of carvings, but a couple of them have these huge elongated skulls. Now, either the Egyptian people decided to carve their pharaoh like a cartoon, or they carved him exactly the way he was, which was much like the elongated skulls that are discovered in South America. So maybe we can say that King Tut's father was either a hybrid or directly a celestial being who was running Egypt at some point in time, in the, you know, which we could place historically, right?
Yeah.
Well, and why they may be now influencing us and, you know, can intervene, like when we're going to do something stupid. Back then, you may have had a direct human hybrid, alien hybrid, or a celestial being in charge of an actual country on Earth. So I guess that's, you know, I guess that what I'm saying is that probably has not happened on the planet where there was actually a celestial being running a government and in charge of people for thousands upon thousands of years. Do you think that's a safe assumption?
Well, in terms of direct celestial influence, it has taken place in the past. It was removed because it was part of the fallen, essentially, the ones we call demons and whatever fallen angels. They were very active at one time. They were removed. However, they did mix their genetics with different points in society differently. And one of the interesting things that I did get to observe was that in encountering these scientist types, the Stagian types, who had these long, extended, elongated craniums, and as I said, their heads were extremely tall, they wanted me to remember that. They absolutely wanted me to realize that they were a part of those that were involved in the early days of the civilization uplift of our planet, but it actually failed because of the direction it was taking. Now they're not disengaged; they remain engaged, but not in a overt way. They're more covert, more hidden. As one of the things that was made clear to me was the fact that my memory had to be shut down. I remember Nella telling me, taking the wand, and she's going to hit me with the wand, actually physically hit me with the wand, but hit me with the wand so that I would forget. And when I ducked my head to avoid it, she looked at me with a very kind manner, gently explained that she has to do that. She cannot let me go back to the planet Earth with full memory. But she assured me that my memory would be restored at the proper time. And at that point, I said, okay, fine, then you can do that. However, this does indicate to me that their influence has been covered up. And it's by their choice, more than our government's choice, in keeping it covered up.
We've got a couple emails that have come in, if you don't mind answering a few questions.
Okay.
Dear Michael, how much time do we have till the, quote, poop hits the fan from Rob Wicks in Bedford, Massachusetts?
It depends what that poop hitting the fan
is. I'm glad he used the word poop instead of the other.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but it's really a matter of transition. I was given at least this much insight, that the progression of that transition will not necessarily be instantaneous, but it would come quickly. Quickly meaning within a span of a few years. And in other words, it won't happen overnight. You just wake up one day and the whole world's fried to toast. It will come through a transition, and some of the transitions that we're experiencing now are the early signs of more to come. And this is probably one of the indicators. I remember early in my days in the Christian ministry, looking toward when would the last days start? When would could we classify the time as the last days? And a friend of mine came to me the next day and said he had a terrible dream that night, and he said he is a man that grew up on running up and down the, I believe the Hudson is New York, and seeing, you know, the construction and of the Twin Towers and living there and seeing everything around it, came and he said, they're not there. They weren't there. Michael, they weren't there anymore. They were gone. They were gone. And I said, oh, that was something you remembered probably from, no, it's so clear to me. It says the buildings that came up after the tower, they're there. But the towers, they're gone. And I said, oh, okay, now I know. When the towers disappear, we've entered into the last days. Essentially, the feathers hit the fan. And we've been living in those times right now. So it's a progress in work right now.
Dear Michael, I want to be part of the new consciousness and evolve as far as humans can. What can I do? From 3M.
That new consciousness was actually instituted 2,000 years ago. However, it was brought to various kinds of ends or holding patterns or stifled in development through culture, through philosophy, through incorrect teachings in terms of religion. Now, just the idea of religion means to reconnect, actually reconnect with what? Reconnect with the divine, actually. And the divinity is already built in the individual. And my initial concept was to look, or inquiry was to look for if there was God, and then for the purpose and meaning and structure of why human life was. And that was to ascend, to actually become divine. So that required first the willingness to change, to take on the new role, a new attitude, no longer keeping base animal needs. I mean, animals are wonderful. I mean, I have lots of pets, you know, whether they be birds or dogs or cats or fish or you name it, they all seem to get along, but they're animals, and they have no real ability to ascend to the divine, which is our prerogative, which is our invite. And it was put that way even by Jesus Christ and by those who came before him, whether they were of the Abrahamic root or came the other through other channels of enlightenment, Buddha being one of them. And they actually give us insight into terms of like meditation, quieting our outer mind. The busy mind is just looking at everything running back and forth. The concept of just living life day to day with no concern over the fact that we have divinity built into ourselves, and all we need to do is gain access to that. Now, the bridgeway to access is through actually a human structure, which is our human structure, made available to us by the Creator Son, His common name, Jesus Christ. So we walk across that bridge. And then that would not be an alien relationship, something out of this world. It'd be a human-to-divine crossing. And that human-to-divine crossing comes in basic forms. If you like to communicate through words, fine. Use those words. But in a sincere sense, if you like to communicate through emotions and feelings toward the divine, those things will work. The key is an openness to receive the answer. Once that answer comes in, then essentially the idea of connecting has gone past an idea to a relationship. Once that relationship is established, then you realize this concept which was given to us in words of the river of life that comes and does and has no end, and peace that passes all understanding that only can come by those who have that cycle built in. But it first starts with a very human relationship. And we are lucky to have, actually, of all the universe, the Creator's Son choose planet Earth and the human body type, which, by the way, the human body type is not unique to planet Earth. There are lots of humanoid types and some humans that are just like us that never lived on planet Earth. But in any case, that bridgeway has been built, and that is all we got to do is just walk across the bridge using what we've been equipped with, and these communication skills will grow because the answers come, and when the answers come, they'll guide us and they'll build up this relationship across the plane of our conscious life as we deload ourselves with the day-to-day noise of life and to the more divine. And believe it or not, these things can come in inspirational ideas, some things concerning answers to technical problems. They're actually gained many times through the mind circuit that is part of the divine circuit. So your answers not necessarily will only be philosophical or religious. They can be quite scientific. They can be answers to problems that basically, because of our nature, have very difficult ways to overcome. Sometimes it's more in terms of the supernatural ability and tolerance. Another thing that needs to get away from our relationship to that new relationship is ourselves. If we remain on center or self-centered, we become shielded, and because of this shielding, we don't relate toward first source, that divinity within. And because of that, our growth is essentially stifled, and we no longer find the reflection circuit working. So a lot of times we'll be moved or nudged and nudged away from our center, and those would require us to do unselfish things. And if we are guided to do some unselfish things, I think that's some of the things that we got to do. I know you mentioned, Z-Man, you mentioned something that said if we were to take on ourselves just one more person to care for, this whole world would be a better place. And that's the concept of moving off of self.
If just half of us looked after ourselves and one other person, we could all be taken care of.
Yeah, and right? There are different ways in which you can do that.
That will be on tomorrow's quiz. Write that down, ladies and gentlemen. Let's squeeze one more email if you can answer it in less than a minute. Michael, what should I look for to know that we are near a change this year? Terry Williams wrote that.
Okay, Terry. The change needs to be defined in terms of what you're looking for. And change is one thing that is the constant. So anything we can rely upon, we can rely upon change. However, change that will be dramatic, the ones that will be global, are in progress, the way we do business in the world, that is changing. The way science approaches everything, science and religion approaching themselves, that change is also happening. But one of the key signs to look for is also this galactic influence that comes to our planet in terms of weather, geologic energies, like, you know, increased and stronger earthquakes, volcanism, and celestial signs that will especially be on the increase. And I really go back to the sun because it's a good image, easily observed, because it's always there. It comes back up. We can revolve right back in and look at it again every day. This is given even greater significance through our scientific instruments and to observe, and even to observe some very supernatural events that we did at one time, Z-Man, look at in terms of those interesting creatures, you might say, individuals that were running around the sun.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that never happened, right, folks? That never happened. There were never giant spheres the size of Earth and the sun's corona. That never happened. We're going to deny that, aren't we? Folks, we're down to our last 30 seconds. I don't care how much in trouble I'm in with CBS News, because I'm going to take the last moments to say the following. Michael does this program because he told his celestial friends he would help get the word out there. He's not only on this broadcast, he's also on Hello Earth and broadcastyurancha.com. Check it out. That's what we're here for. Make your choices, folks. Listen to what we have to say. Make up your own minds. If you think we're a bunch of morons, that's your prerogative. Michael, thank you so much for your time. On behalf of all of our listeners, we sincerely appreciate you helping us with this broadcast.
You're welcome, and thank you, and aloha.
Stay tuned, everybody. Artie Cornfield has the number one engineer in recording history coming on after the CBS News. Stay with us, everybody.